Welcome back to Logical Magic Examining Esoterica. Hey guys, today Jacob Fluharty, my intrepid good friend, is joining me once again for yet another subject. This one, we're talking about the different forms of divination. In particular, we're going to be talking about cartomancy, or actually tarot card reading, and how it started, what it can reveal, some of the symbolism contained within it. We were actually talking about during different episodes on different forms of divination. So what are some of those? Tea leaf reading, runes, some people cast dice. There's scrying, there's pendulum work. There's a lot of different forms of divination, but the best known one is cartomancy as practiced through the tarot. So how did the tarot start out? First of all, it was started in Italy in the 1400s, and it started out as a playing card deck. So being used for divination, and what divination is to divine the future, being used for divination did not start until they believe, we don't know specifically who started it. Like, there is no one person. The first well-known card reader was Madame Lenormand, which you may have heard of the Lenormand deck, which is a different form of cartomancy, and we might cover that in a different episode. We don't know what tool she used. She may have used the Tarot de Marseille, which was the first tarot deck used for divination, and it was used up until about 1909, when the deck that most people are most familiar with, which is the Rider-Waite, as it is often referred to, but more accurately should be referred to as the Waite-Smith. And it's called the Rider-Waite because Rider was the publisher, R-I-D-E-R, and then Waite, W-A-I-T-E, was the person who commissioned the artist Pamela Coleman Smith to do the drawings based on the Tarot de Marseille. And she interpreted things, and she included a great many symbols within the artwork for the tarot. It is intentionally meant to subject subconscious and conscious areas. There are different symbols for different things, including knowledge, magic, love, risk. Everything in there is intentional in the Waite-Smith. And from the Waite-Smith, Aleister Crowley, who was a famous occultist who died in like 1947 or so, he was the creator of the Thelema religion, which I'm not the biggest Crowley fan. And I do have decks that are influenced by the Thoth tarot that he produced, but I'm never as fond of it. Yet I do actually take some of the things from the Thoth tarot. And what are some of the things from the Thoth tarot? For instance, interpreting the Seven of Pentacles as failure came from Aleister Crowley's interpretation. And I don't like it as much because he was reinterpreting a woman's work. And there's a lot with Aleister Crowley that goes into things like sex magic and using magic with a K to differentiate it between, you know, stage magicians, which I don't do, in case you haven't noticed. And again, it's because like no dude's really going to tell me what to do. And it's not that I think that he contributed a great deal to the metaphysical and the occult conversation, but I don't think that he was the definitive work in anything. And again, when it comes to the tarot, some of the things he rearranged to include astrology symbolism, I take a little bit of issue with, because simply Pamela Coleman Smith had done such an incredible job. Pamela Coleman Smith, it was part of the Hermetic the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. It's more typically referred to as the Golden Dawn, and that was a metaphysical and occult society. There was Freemasons involved in it as well. So it was a secret society. And they eventually formed an offshoot of that, but she began in that particular order, the Golden Dawn. And it was all about the study of mysticism and occultism and personal power and magic. And everything within the tarot deck, as it became used for divination, most modern day interpretations either refer to the Tarot de Marseille, the Waite-Smith or the Rider-Waite, and then the Thoth tarot as well. There are other tarots, and I actually rarely use just a Waite-Smith for reading because they all turn into divine message decks for me because they all have archangels in them. In some of the major arcana, which are about fateful forces, and because I'm a divine conduit, it just has a tendency to turn into a divine message deck for me. And so I use alternative decks. If you've had a reading with me, you know I have so many of them, and I use different ones for different energies. So how in the world did it start? We don't know. likely through travelers, through people who travel from town to town using either playing cards, something like what was eventually developed as the Lenormand. And I want to talk just very briefly about Madame Lenormand. Madame Lenormand was a person who grew up in France. She was orphaned at the age of 5, although she did have siblings, and was raised in an orphanage in France. It is hard to say how much of her fame was self-created and how much of it was real, but she really did have access to Napoleon and to Josephine and was well known throughout the courts of Europe. And the Lenormand is more likely as a cartomancy deck to be used in parts of Russia and Northern Europe and the Balkans. And the Tarot is more likely to be used in European countries. And the Tarot de Marseille was when it did not have the same symbolism. It still doesn't. It has different artwork on it. But now many readers who read it also incorporate the Waite Smith interpretations and the Thoth interpretations. And most modern day readers work with as much knowledge as they can get and start incorporating it at all. Because ultimately, when you are doing divination, you're basically building a lexicon or an encyclopedia of knowledge for your intuition to rely upon. Once you kind of ingest a piece of knowledge, it's there for your interpretation. So Jacob is a tarot card reader as well. And we both favor a style of reading in which we help people look at their subconscious issues, the things that are holding them back from their greatest outcomes. So that was the lead in on that. And again, this is Logical Magic. Housekeeping at the top. If you need me for a reading or a life coaching session, at therisingmoon.com. My YouTube channel is Chronecast at the Rising Moon. Jacob is Southern Style Readings on Facebook, or also southernstylereadings@gmail.com. Good morning, Jacob. I told you I was going to have a bit of a lead in on that. And that was the condensed form of the history of the tarot. I didn't want to weigh everybody down with dates and figures and drawings quite yet. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
So when you are reading, which of the mentioned sources do you use in your form of tarot card reading the most?
Most of the decks that I use consistently are Rider-Waite-Smith clones. I use the deck that that everyone kind of probably knows from movies and TV. I've kind of strayed away from it now, but when I first started, obviously that's all I used. But now I kind of prefer some of the more updated quote-unquote cloned versions. You've seen some of the ones that I use, obviously. I do have a couple that are not based on any of that original artwork and symbolism, which are fine, because, you know, obviously I have the general knowledge of what the card means without it. But I've shared with you before, I'm much more reliant on imagery in the cards to interpret what my feelings are. So I don't know if that's like a crutch or not, but I do prefer something that has more of that artwork. But I do like some of the other decks that don't necessarily have as much artwork. I don't have any of the Pip decks, which I guess we should talk about what that is. But I don't much care for them, just because there is no artwork to kind of go off of.
Yeah, I didn't bring them up because it's a little bit foreign to me, honest to goodness. And in fact, if you want to go into that a little bit, I'd appreciate it, because I like the imagery.
As far as I can tell, the only difference, all of the majors are usually artwork depicted in some way, mm-hmm. but all of the minors are just like there's that tattoo deck that's out that looks amazing, but all of the minor cards are just like the number, and then they have like that corresponding number of like wands or swords or whatever, and so there's no artwork to deal with. You just have to know, like, hey, the, you know, Four of Pentacles is, you know, means this, blah 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 blah, and go like off that, which is fine. Some people can do that, but like my recall is not super great, and it just feels, I don't know, it doesn't feel as organic, or like I'm getting information as well if I don't have something to like focus on and kind of work off of, if that makes sense.
The imagery kind of gives your like an anchor point for your intuition. And the only card within the Waite-Smith, the Rider-Waite-Smith, that talks about what the pith has a tendency to do is the Eight of Wands, which has the least amount of imagery in the background. It's just eight wands flying at different speeds across a particular, the foreground. And the wands are depicted as having green leaves growing out of them. And it really is the one that like is like you have to focus on it to see what pops up into your mind. Really quickly before we continue with divination, because people are interested in this, and it's a very good tool for discovering the parts of yourself, your shadow side work that you're trying to heal to get your best outcomes. And that is the best use of personal divination. If you try and like use it to see what other people think of you or what's going to happen or what's coming up, that's a valid use of it. But if you use it to try and understand yourself, then every single area of your life begins to improve. Not everyone can do it, but it's not. It's also not like exclusionary, meaning that if you work with it, you will continue to develop it. Now, most people can either read for themselves or they can read for other people, but they can't do both. Most people can't read at a predictive tarot for them, a predictive level for themselves, because our ego gets in the way. We see what we want to see, no matter, because all the cards have so many different meanings. And I want to touch again ever so slightly on Madame Lenormand, who we have no idea whether or not she used the Tarot de Marseille or the Lenormand cards that she developed. She likely was using cards that she developed, and here is why we think that. I mentioned that she did have surviving siblings, or she was, it's a little unknown who this nephew was who inherited her, you know, decent sized amount of money when she died, something like 500 francs. And she died in the 1780s, I believe. And when she died, he was a staunch Catholic. So he took the money and he burned everything. Like, he's like, well, not staunch enough to not take the proceeds, but, you know, staunch enough that he destroyed her life's work as a thank you for leaving him money. So she got done pretty dirty by a dude in her life as well. That is a very important figure. Marie Anne Adelaide Lenormand is a very important figure in cartomancy because she legitimized it at a level, took it from, you know, I don't like the word gypsy, it's considered a slur, onto the Roma, but it took it from being associated with travelers to being associated with something that in a card-obsessed society, as most of the French and the English courts were at that particular time, it took it from being something that was a little bit seedy and a little bit I love it. And so it's hard for me to associate it with negative things, but it was considered something that was a little bit more of a carnival game before Lenormand. And we'll touch on really quickly, does the Bible actually say that we should not be doing this? Yes, it does, in the book of Leviticus, but that is the same book that says that we should not mix certain fabrics. And it's the same book that, you know, tells you how many goats your daughter is worth. It's an archaic piece of literature. And it is, I believe, allegorical. And I was raised in a church that taught me it was allegorical. And so it is just a way to reach the divine. And many of the things in that self-same book have to do with dietary restrictions and preventing allergies. And if you've ever eaten a ham sandwich and enjoyed it, you too are in variance with Leviticus. We cast aside things and we hold on to others. And divination, where it can be used for things to control other people, and the reason that it is frowned upon in the Bible is that only God is supposed to be omnipotent and omniscient. And tarot will not allow you to be omniscient nor omnipotent, but what it does do is it gives you a window into yourself, into your future, and into others that, if you use it with good intent, can help you heal and help you achieve a great deal and help you find your life's purpose. So, Jacob, how'd you get into tarot reading?
Oh, man. I got into it, but it would have been 2018, 2019, when I really got started into it really heavily. When I was growing up, there's always been like this kind of pull to esotericism in my life. Probably from my Catholic background has something to do with that. But it's always been there. It's something I tried when I was younger, but it didn't really go anywhere from there. So I was just like, okay, whatever, and just moved on. But then I got this strange pull to get back into it. When I was living in Wisconsin, I was kind of going through this renaissance about, you know, who I was and what I believed. And I was deconstructing from Christianity a lot. And so I decided to start going back into this, you know, more esoteric spiritual life or whatever, giving it a shot, seeing how it felt. And that's when I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna start reading cards again and see kind of what comes of it. And, you know, read a bunch of books, did some stuff for myself. And then I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to get on the internet and join some groups that existed at the time. I can't remember what the app was, but there was a ton of groups on there. And so I got on some message boards and some chat groups and started reading for other people. And then come to find out, I wasn't completely off base whenever I was doing my readings. I was like, okay, this is interesting. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And then I met you shortly thereafter. And then things really got going. And it's been kind of riding the snowball downhill ever since.
Well, and I started reading cards when I was 19 years old with a college roommate, and we were terrible, full disclosure. Oh my God, we were so bad at it. If it didn't involve a guy, we simply did not care. So every single interpretation of a card, we tried to make it fit whatever dude we were asking about, because, you know, hey, priorities when you're 19, totally makes sense. And I bought my own deck. There is a legend that you're supposed to be gifted a deck. It doesn't really work that way. You can buy your own deck. I bought my own deck when I relocated to Colorado like 2 years later, and have been reading in some capacity on and off ever since. My ex-husband was not comfortable with a lot of the magic and tarot card reading and things that I did when he met me. And I shelved a lot of things for the time that we were together. I still did things like I almost want to say on the sly, but and like my intuition never shut down either. And I had done a bunch of magic to help him succeed as well. But for a while in my life, because what had happened was I got better at reading and I kept predicting a death in his family. And in fact, his father did die. And he was upset, of course, honestly, after, you know, and I didn't. It wasn't that I was trying to see gloom and doom and there was absolutely nothing that I could do to prevent it. But that was a distancing thing when it came to like tarot being welcome in that household. And I always still kept my tarot decks. And like for kind of a long time now at this point, I have been back into like my tarot cards are a daily part of my life. And that is part of the reason that I encourage people to find the tool that will help them open up their ability to look within, because in the spiritual concept of ego death, which is essential to our evolution in a spiritual concept, ego death is part of that. And ego death is brought to you by recurring themes within the cards that you might draw that are trying to get you to take a look at things. I'm going to talk really specifically about a couple of the major arcana. In the major arcana and the minor arcana of the tarot, again, largely influenced by the Waite-Smith deck is what I'm going to be talking about. But the Thoth strip sneaks in there as well, because now many 12 major arcana cards have an astrological association for like Taurus or Aries or etc. And so those were assigned through the Thoth. But when we look at the tarot, we start with card zero, and that is the Fool in it. It's called the Fool. Some call it the Adventurer. Like other new decks that are offshoots use different names, but the original one in the Waite-Smith interpretation, which is a little bit like where everything grows from there for me. It's not that I've never incorporated other beliefs. I obviously have. But everything grows from there. Now, Waite-Smith did not have people read in reversals, and I've always read reversals. And I am actually self-taught. And so everything, I learned how to read cards and then kept building a lexicon of knowledge around it. And that's what I recommend for people. And I actually, if you want to start reading tarot, I'm going to give you a recommendation for a tarot deck that you might like that has a good, inclusive, and like it's a short synopsis of numerology, which is present in it, symbolism, what the different suits stand for, which are, you know, all of the elements, which is fire, water, earth, air. They are present within the suits of the tarot. And it is actually Tarot Your Way by Barbara Moore, M-O-O-R-E, because it has a guidebook that will cover the court cards, the major arcana and the minor arcana. And the major arcana are archetype cards, such as the Fool, the Empress, the High Priestess, the Emperor. It goes on and on. And those are about the big forces at work in your life. For the most part, our lives, our paths are constructed of our choices. Those are represented by the minor arcana. Those are smaller occurrences within life. But the major arcana are the fateful forces that are work in your life. And in most decks, there are 22 major arcana. Some expand it. Again, it's not, I don't believe that anything, nothing is sacrosanct in this particular field. If your intuition calls you to expand something, if you are introduced to a meeting and it becomes part of your knowledge base, then that is a legitimate interpretation. And how does it work? And that's the thing that most people really genuinely don't understand. Nobody truly understands, but here is the theory. The theory is that it taps into your own psychic ability, sometimes referred to as your pineal gland or your third eye. And what is that? It is the part of yourself that gives you access to what is called your higher self, also known as the part of yourself that stands outside the flow of time and can see your past, your future, your present. And there is something to keep in mind with the idea of the concept of the higher self, which is it will not overly invest in the suffering of a moment. Meaning that like people get very angry about things going on in their lives. And it's like, if I had guides, why wouldn't they help me? Why would I ever choose a life path that contained this? Because the part of yourself, your higher self, knows that everything will pass. And then it also understands that the investment that we have within our lifespan in the things that happen, in the minutiae, in the details, is we overinvest in the moment for the suffering and instead sometimes skip by the lesson. And it is partially because the concept of your higher self predates both your birth and then exists after your death. So it is outside of the flow of time. And that means that your feelings, which are something that sometimes overwhelm our ability to learn or our ability to reach for our spirituality, are the things that stand between you and true evolution. And your higher self is always trying to guide you towards that spiritual evolution. And Jacob and I did the Seven Energies podcast about the things that we're all trying to overcome to be in better alignment with our higher self. But the tool that helps you access your higher self and the things that your higher self are trying to help you learn are often divination tools. And I'm going to talk more again about the Fool. It's the first deck. It's the first card in any tarot deck. It's the number zero. It typically has a dog depicted on it. This is where we're going to get into some symbolism that can be about loyalty, companionship. It can also be about the need to be benevolent to those in your charge. In the Fool, it has the yellow as the background in the Waite Smith. Remember, the cards are going to also correspond to chakra colors. That can be about personal power. It can be about new beginnings. It can be about growth. The depiction of the suit of like, it's basically wearing a fool's regalia on. It has flowers on it and sunbursts as well, and is holding a white rose, which stands in for purity. All of these things are contained in the study of the Waite Smith. There is a knapsack on the person's back, suggesting that they will have what they need for the journey. The figure is usually looking up and standing on the edge of a cliff, which is about going forward in life, but needing to be cautious. There are mountains in the background, which often depict, depending on how close they are and the conditions of the mountains, the challenges that will be faced. It can be about new beginnings. It can be about faith. It can be about the need to be cautious. As I said, I do read reversals. So the need to be cautious is something that I get from a reversal. It is one of the most enthusiastic cards, and it's about new beginnings as well. So it's the one that like people see, and it has a good vibe to it. There's a sun, which is about healing and positivity. Jacob, what's your favorite major arcana? Do you have one?
My favorite, I don't think I have a favorite. You know, that Hierophant follows me around a lot still. usually whenever I'm doing stuff for myself, hasn't come up with a review for a while. I don't know, I'm kind of stuck on that one and have been for years now, just because it keeps showing up so much. But yeah, I don't know that I have a particular favorite. They all bring something to the table.
What always like, cause when I met you, like you, the Hierophant, which is the fifth card in the major arcana, which is associated with the astrological sign Taurus. I am a Taurus. I found out recently that it's most people's least favorite major arcana. And I was like, why? Cause it depicts a traditional figure. It used to be called the Pope and it does depict a priest. And it is actually, it's not supposed to be about higher religion. The symbols within this When you're looking at the cards in any deck, you want to pay attention to the age of the figure, what they're wearing, the condition of their clothes, what they're holding, position of hands, any objects that are there, anything in the foreground. This, and then the thing about the Hierophant that most people miss is the crossed keys at the foot of the Hierophant. And that is about having access to higher realms, higher education, doors being opened. It's a card of authority and of power. The figure is almost always holding a three-barred cross, which is supposed to depict the Trinity. The finger position is actually Venus is depicted in that as well. So the figure is holding up his hand in a way that is supposed to have a tie to astrology. And there are usually two figures in the front that are almost in like a bowed down position to the Hierophant. So it is a card of patriarchal authority. It is the card of traditionalism. It can be the card of governments, anything that has control over others. But it's meant to be a benevolent card, and it's not always a benevolent card. It's a card of conformity, but it's also a card of therapy, of mentorship, of higher learning, of seeking the help that you need. It can be a card for 12 steps. And this is why when we start talking about the tarot, it is incredibly complex. And the first thing you want to do if you're trying to learn how to read tarot is learn how to do a three-card spread, which is in its most like simplistic form, the past, present, and future in the three cards. Now, when you get a little more advanced, you start to connect it almost in a sentence. As you continue with a reading, as questions come up, if you look at a card, you want to pay attention to what your eyes are drawn to. That is frequently your intuition trying to guide you towards something, to try and reveal something. With the Fool, I get the Fool a lot, and it's because, you know, I've spoken a lot about being very isolated growing up, and it led to a certain naivete as I was approaching others. That like, if you don't possess something, it's hard for you to perceive it. And so that's another meaning of the Fool, is being naive in a situation. Sometimes it's about being a little bit too trusting, because this dude's about to wander off a cliff if he's not careful. The Hierophant is one of like seeking power through traditional means. If you get it in reverse, it can be, I'm always a nonconformist and a rebellious figure, even in my own readings. Like I just said, I don't like Aleister Crowley very much, because like some dude's not going to tell me about my relationship to magic. And again, I have a thing where if a guy formed a religion that has a lot of sex involved in it, I kind of little, I give it the old side eye, because it's like, okay, well, that was convenient, right? really, a guardian angel told you to have sex with many different women. That's fascinating. And I'm being very reductive towards Aleister Crowley, who's a very important figure. But as I said, it is, I don't like a male authority figure, which the Hierophant is often talking about male authority figures, trying to define particularly a woman's relationship to her power, to her intuition, or to her magic. And so that's where Thoth, the Thoth Tarot, which is Crowley's main invention in the tarot, and I part ways. Some of the meanings, and they never really, like the Seven of Swords meaning futility instead of like strategy or lies, seat manipulation or tiptoeing or walking on eggshells or all of the, or temporary situation. Because if you look at the Rider Waite, there's a tent in the background. Always examine tarot cards for what is in the foreground, what is in the background, and see what they represent to you. And that is one of the things that the cards are trying to talk to you about. And how do they arrange themselves in the right order when... We don't know. We don't know. That's where the mysticism and the metaphysical and the magical connection comes in. But anybody who's had a reading with a good tarot card reader can tell you it obviously works. It genuinely obviously works. Even if we don't understand why, do we understand that it does? And so there is some suspension of disbelief that can allow you access to the internal world that you have and the internal world that other people have that can be so confusing, that keeps us, like, if your whole life's path is about trying to learn 10 volumes, because if you come here with the intention of learning, this is obviously just an example. It is not, it's not supposed to be something that's concrete. But if you come here to learn 10 volumes, you might get stuck on volume 3 if you don't deal with your subconscious issues and the things that hold you back. And that leaves 7 volumes that you have to come back and address either in a different life or there is a theory that you simply live out this lifetime again and again, stuck in a groundhog day kind of thing, until you learn the lessons that you're meant to. So there is an actual personal development reason to start going towards a better understanding of self. Not everybody, somebody else is more likely to be able to bring forward things for you because you were in denial about our own stuff. Jacob, what do you think the tarot's taught you about your own stuff?
It's definitely helped me to access the part of me that's, more of like that subconscious stuff, like ego death, basically, I guess is the easiest way to describe it, right? The thing that I love about tarot is it, I always get this messed up, but it takes objective symbols and allows you to apply them objectively to your life, right? So whenever you're reading the cards, it's easier to get to access those parts of your subconscious, right? Because you're not, I don't really know how it works per se, but it's easier to kind of have a better view of yourself and see more parts of yourself because you're not so focused on what you want to see or what you want to hear. It's just there. And the symbols speak to you based on your own personal experience with them. I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, you and I might look at a card and we know what the standard accepted interpretation of the card is, but there's always room for wiggle room based on your own personal experiences. Or one of my decks is very heavily influenced by Irish mythology, so it uses those same base symbols or whatever, but then weave some of that in there as well. So my interpretation of a card in that deck may be different than the interpretation in another deck of the same card. So it just allows a more nuanced view of yourself, I guess, without the pretense that you build for yourself as well.
And it can also work with the things that you've learned. So in the Waite-Smith or the Rider-Waite-Smith, there's a lot of religious symbolism involving archangels and the church and other things that are part of a traditional structure. And so your subconscious can start working with those. The Thoth Tarot works with Egyptology. The god Thoth is I'm squinting because I'm not the best at Egyptology, is the god of magic, of wisdom, of messages, of learning. Thoth basically is involved with overseeing the universal workings. And so that's, I think, why Aleister Crowley chose Thoth as the figure to begin incorporating into the tarot. Pamela Coleman Smith incorporated a great many figures from the archangels. In particular, the judgment card depicts the Archangel Gabriel with the trumpet. And I get that all the time because I'm connected to the Archangel Gabriel. The Hermes was the god of messages in a different mythology, and Thoth is one of the god of messages in Egyptology. They're all about messages. And typically what the tarot is trying to do is bring you messages both from your guides, from your guardians, from your ancestors, from your higher self as well. And so that's what it is meant to help do. Now, can it help predict when you're going to meet somebody, whether you're going to? Yes, it can do all of that. It can do all of that. Every single reading that is pulled will have multiple answers to multiple questions. I typically do more than one draw because I like to try and separate energies. But what you want to do when you're asking a question and you pull cards is pay attention to the cards that you get. And the first meaning that you will see is the one that you want. Meaning that even as another reader, if you're asking, it's the most typical, people always want to know about relationships. And honest to goodness, if they could try to redirect towards relationships towards themselves, they'd have better relationships with others anyway. And so they'd be less reliant on what's going to happen and more invested in what they can make happen as they heal, as they grow, and they evolve. Oh, one more word on Aleister Crowley and why, why do you not like Crowley so much? Because Crowley is do what you will, never impose your will on another person, to not interfere with another person's will. And I'm represented by the Tower for a lot of people, because that's the card of divine intervention, as well as anything being built on a faulty foundation, falling, complete and sudden change. And I'm an advocate for change. And so it's another thing where it's like, oh no, I'm pretty sure my life's purpose here is like not to interfere in a meddling way, but to try and make things better. And since my deep belief is that most people's life's purpose is to try and find the way that they are supposed to be contributing to this world, it's like the idea that we're not supposed to almost offends me. And again, we come from different spheres. And if there's neutral energy bears a place in the structure of reality. So I get that there's validity to it and different people are called to different things. And ultimately what I'm talking about is I'm just from a different energy signature. I'm here to do a different thing. And again, the whole male authority trying to tell women what they can and cannot do is something that I have, I think has injured our world and women in particular tremendously. So that's yet another thing. Jacob, when you're talking about tarot, what do you think the pitfalls of it are?
The pitfalls are like, what do you mean?
I can give an example. Quite frequently, what happens to people who have anxiety issues in a stress-filled world when so many things are happening and we're so reliant on money, people are pretty stressed out. People are pretty anxious. They go and get a tarot reading. The tarot reader tells them something that's going to happen. And suddenly they have a tool that they want to be able to like soothe their anxiety with. It can tell me what's going to happen. It can't make good things happen and the cards can't make things happen. And then people get repetitive readings trying to soothe their anxiety, and that's the pitfall. Whereas like, well, what could you do instead? You can heal what causes your anxiety, what causes your lack of confidence in self to be able to meet the challenges. And so that's what I mean by pitfalls. What do you think?
Yeah, no, tarot shopping is a real thing, right? Like we both worked for services before that. You know, we saw clients like that very heavily. When I first got started, we used to have rules in our groups about like how many readings you could request. Like everything had to go through the group. So we all saw them and like there was a hard, limit. And that seems weird. But at the same time, like if you are just looking for the answer that you're looking for, then there's no growth happening. Right. And that's the whole reason like you and I do this. I have to speak for you as well. It's like yes, we want to be able to help you with like this predictive, tarot or whatever. But at the end of the day, what we're really here is personal reflection and growth based on the information that we're given. And so if you're just taking you should take what resonates and leave the rest behind, sure. But if you're only going to take the thing that you wanted to hear, then there is no growth involved with that. And so what are we even doing here from my perspective?
Well, and we can all be, and I've been, I've been resistant to messages in the past as well. We can all be resistant to the messages that come through. It's usually about the areas we have to heal, the areas we need to grow, the areas that we need to expand. You touched briefly on psychic services, and we both worked for services in the past. And I worked for one that like they're very, very ethical people. I really have a lot of trust in them. And I worked for one that they were not, and I did not work for them very long. And by the way, so that like it was Mystic Sense is the one that I worked for, that at the time that I worked for them, they were pretty ethical people. They would not allow their readers to exploit their clients and things, which can happen. Not everybody who gets involved in this trade has good intent. Some people are, it's like any other walk of life. They're different types of people. The thing on lines is that usually it's people calling in to find out about a relationship. And they will get repetitive readings seeking reassurance through the cards. When if you're in a healthy relationship, you don't need that from an exterior source. You have it within the relationship. And so it's kind of like you're using this tool to get an answer. And once you have an answer in your mind, understand it can influence a reader's outcome. So you might get the same answer over and over and over again, and then it turns out not to be right. And it's because you've had hyper focus around it. And it was the only thing the reader could find in your energy because it was you wanted what you want. You're hyper focused on what you want. It's blocking out all your other outcomes. And so there are pitfalls around this. It can be addictive for some people because of that, because it can be an anxiety soothing tool. There are rules, hard and fast rules around how many readings you should get. There aren't. But I will cut people off on getting too many rings. I will tell them specifically, please don't. And in normal circumstances, the most you should do is about every 90 days. And that's only when you're working through something. Most people, once every 6 months, some people are fine with once a year. When somebody's really going through something, because I've helped people leave abusive relationships, they've gotten multiple readings for a small amount of time. And then we start tapering them off. It can be a guiding tool during a very difficult time, but you have to remember that a tool can become a crutch. And I don't ask many questions about what's coming up. When I do daily draws and I get information about the energies that are surrounding me every day, because it's the easiest way for my guides to communicate with me. But for instance, when I got up this morning, I did a daily draw, and it was all beware and the devil, and there was one for a thief. And I was like, good God, what's going to happen? And I got home from running an errand to pick up some dog treats, and there was a scam email with your payment is enclosed. It's like, oh yeah, sure it is. So my cards were literally telling me about a funky, because like I said, they just tell you what's coming up. And there is a part of you that knows how quickly you would do something again. So you may get condensed answers. I literally sometimes will pick up ads that I'm going to see, because I do consult with my cards to get in touch with my guides. I don't do it. It's not to ask questions. It really is always, what do I need to know? And that is the thing that I always tell people who are seeking readings, which is the best question to ask is, what do I need to know? Because it's going to tell you what you're trying to heal to get the best outcomes. Now, that is not to say there isn't a place, and I do these readings all the time. What's coming in my career? Am I going to meet somebody? There's nothing wrong with wanting to fall in love. The pitfall with tarot is that sometimes people begin conducting either non-reciprocal or unsatisfying relationships through the cards. And it's almost like the Cyrano for the relationship. And sometimes it works out, but most of the time it's like, well, if you have so many questions about a relationship, it's best addressed within the 3D. And again, if you are engaging in non-reciprocal relationships, then honest to goodness, it's a very, very common, because quite frequently people aren't really well acquainted with how to express their feelings towards other people. But if you're conducting a lot of finding out about relationships through cards, the thing to really try and heal within yourself is, why would I accept relationships into my life for people who aren't meeting me on the same ground, who don't value me at the level that I value them? Because that self-respect, that self-confidence, and that self-love, and that's all part of a spiritual concept. What have you encountered, Jacob, in people because you've read for me, and you know that during a terrible divorce battle, my goodness, did the cards ever they practically propped me up and carried me through, because it was so very difficult. But for the most part, that's only during an emergency that you should really rely on a tool that much. And then you have to recognize when it's time to be like, no, I don't need the crutch any longer. I can stand, I can walk, I can run. What have you encountered from people?
I don't really have too many repeat guests. I'm not at work right now. Repeat clients. For the most part, it seems like the people that I work with kind of get what they need, and then they move on. And I'm actually really happy about that, because it makes me feel like they, got the information they needed. They were able to work on their issues and move forward, and that's really great. And honestly, a lot of my stuff that I get, like the one I have coming up, I need to do today, is just about hey, I have this contract job and it ends on this date, and I don't know, if I want to renew it or if I want to find something else. And I'm like, okay, bet. So for that, I like it, because it's semi-predictive in a way, but they have a decision to make. And I find that 9 times out of 10, people already know what decision they want to make. They are just looking for maybe a reassurance or something. And so I like doing readings like that, because it's a mixture of both, right? So we get a little bit of that, what's coming up, what would the best, quote unquote, best decision be? But it also offers options. And so the person is able to use their own subjective feelings and intuition to take the information that I provide and then apply it to what's going on. Because obviously I'm not going to know everything about a person. And so they're going to need to take what I bring to the table, kind of digest it. That's why I think I tell you often I'm a slow burn kind of reader. Yeah. You may not get all the information that you want when we're talking, but as you digest the information that you're given, almost always you'll call me next week and be like, ah, yes, I realize now exactly what you meant. Thank you so much.
Jacob, so, I'm going to like give an example of what you're talking about in your reading style. Yeah. There was something that I thought I had completely resolved. And like you and I touch base, we'll pull cards for each other. And like, you know, I'm always the what do I need to know or what's coming up thing. The card, the devil, showed up after mm-hmm. I thought I had really resolved. And the devil is all about, like, it can be materialism and lust and like opulence. And it's not every single card has a good and a negative meaning. Like the tower, which is the one that people are like, oh my God, that looks like catastrophe. It can also be divine intervention. It can also be mm-hmm. your path being entirely cleared. It can also be an epiphany. It can also be spiritual enlightenment. Now, is it destruction sometimes? Yeah, sure. It absolutely is. It depends. This is where intuition comes in. This is where intuition comes in. The feeling that you get when you look at a card as it goes down. And the devil popped up for us when we were doing a reading like last March or so. I was like, what the heck is that being there? And we both knew it was like what it was referring to. And there was one last thing I had not confronted in something that I thought I had resolved. And it did have to do with what led me to lead, choose partners in the past that were like, they were very unkind to me. Like being so badly abused as a child meant that if somebody rose above that level and they were better than that, then I thought they were a pretty good person, not realizing that like that, you know, that was a forest fire and this is a campfire type of thing. It was like, there was degrees. And like, that's what the tarot can do for you as well, is that sometimes there can be something that you have not confronted. And I didn't confront that part, even though it was kind of like, I did the work right after that. Because like, I just wanted it to be done. I was like, God, this has been a long path. I just want this part to be resolved. When that card came out, I was like, okay, that is the card of addiction. It is the card of codependency. It is the card of being enslaved to something that is not serving you. And if you look at the depiction on it, it's the one with the horn, you know, it looks like there's a devil on it. This is where you start looking at the symbolism. There are two naked figures with chains around their necks, but the chains are loose around their necks, meaning that they could, if they wanted to, drop what they are holding and remove them. So your freedom is contained within your choices. There is almost nothing, but there are things. There's almost nothing within a tarot reading that you have no power over. Sometimes things are going to happen. Sometimes it gives me a slight case of the creeps how often I'm able actually to accurately predict when someone will die. It was not something I ever sought out. It just was something that started to come through on readings. But that's the type of thing that can very seldom be avoided if it's from natural causes, if it's at the end of a life, but it can help people prepare in the relationships that they do have to know that there may be an end date. Some tarot readers will not predict death at all. Some absolutely glory in it. Some people really like the dramatic readings on that. But tarot, when it gives you an outcome that you don't want or you aren't anticipating, ask yourself, what am I supposed to be trying to heal? And this one is the one that comes out the most in relationships. Because if somebody is single, they like to get a tarot card reading for when am I going to meet somebody? The tarot cannot bring you a human being. And so sometimes you'll get readings and it's like, there's nobody there for a while. And it can be so painful for the person. It's like, well, if you heal what is keeping you from attracting your best partner, from living your best life, or simply being happy, being single, it won't be a source of pain any longer. So when you don't get the outcomes that you're hoping for from a reading, or you're getting recurring cards, looking into the symbolism of what they mean and what you might need to confront, because it really is a tool that will allow you access to the things that are your shadow side, the subconscious, the parts of yourself that sometimes are controlling your outcomes by kind of urging you to do things that are not in your best interest, invest in people who potentially are not worth your time, or to go down paths because you're hopeful and you're trying to have tunnel vision. It's like, I don't want to see that thing because it's not real. Like, honest to goodness, I got told by so many people that I needed to leave my husband for a very, very long time before I actually did. And it was because I was very invested in seeing him as a person as I thought he was versus then everybody else could see him as being. And so we all do that. We all, denial is a protective construct within our psyche that can get out of control. The tarot is a tool that can help chip away at the fortress that we have built around the things we don't want to look at. We have to be willing to look inward in order to do that. And tarot has a lot of uses, and some of it's fun, and romance is great. Like, if you want to get a reading to find out, when am I going to meet somebody, please go with God, go do it. But remember that there's more to what the tarot can do, and that it can tell you that. And then it can also tell you about how to improve other aspects of your life so that you're happy until that person gets there, or maybe instead of that person getting there, because not everybody's path contains the same things. And we did all come here to have a different experience. And divination is one of the ways that can help you look within. And for people who think it's against a religious system to look within, I personally think it is a tool that was given to us by a higher power, by our guides, by our higher self, in order to help us confront the things that sometimes we don't want to see. And I'm speaking very specifically of myself. Have you had any experiences like that as well, Jacob?
Well, I mean, for me, it's just, I have this idea that, we're all a part of this, greater collective consciousness, right? So I like to use examples like, think of your brain as like an antenna, and it is picking up the waves of the consciousness, right? But because of our egos, because of, socialization and all these other things, we are oftentimes pretty blocked on the information that we're getting, right? Our intuition is all over the place because we never really are really, taught how to, flex that muscle, I guess. And so that's what I love about the cards is it's a way to, take these symbols and work with them and open up that part of your brain that maybe is blocked, not able to receive these signals. It allows those signals to come through. So, I mean, that's kind of how I approach it.
One thing to remember is that there are multiple outcomes and multiple, like, we all stand at crossroads over and over again, and I'm a crossroads guide. People are like, they find me when they're trying to make a decision quite frequently. And right. Honest to goodness, it's not that you can find out the question that you're asking, and then you can find out more information about being able to hone your outcomes to better and better ones. Because honest to goodness, part of the belief in a spiritual system is the universe will bring you a lesson over and over again until you learn it. And it's because it's what your soul agreed to do before you ever came here. And it can be sometimes about investing in those who will also invest in you, as a for instance. It can be about understanding that the parts of yourself you don't like as much as the parts of yourself that you do, stop being ashamed of them and embrace them and heal them. Treat them with love and compassion. And the tarot can give you a window into what those parts are. But a lot of people shut down around denial. I don't do this. I don't do that. I'm going to use a very specific example. And I'm going to have multiple clients going, you must be talking about me. This has happened to so many people. And I'm not revealing any revealing details in it. Is that particularly for people who suffered abuse as children, they learn to shut their feelings down. And they stuff them down so much that sometimes they have trouble acknowledging them. And it really does lead to a lot of denial, particularly in the relationships that they have in their lives. And when they start confronting that pain from the past, it gives them more access to their emotions in the present, which improves their outcomes in the future. And the example that I wanted to use is a client who came to me who the first time I read for them, I saw that they had a form of trauma in their past that left them with a trauma disorder. And I talked about it a little bit, and they were a repeat client and came back to me. And again, this can describe 25 people. So if you're like, it's me. It's like, it might be, but it could be somebody else. They kept coming back to me for readings because even though they rejected the idea at first, it helped them. It helped them to start looking at what they needed to look at. And very specifically, it was that they had convinced themselves that to still be suffering from something that had happened to them in their childhood was weak. versus an indication of an injury that could be healed. And it changed their entire world in approaching the idea of it is not weak to still be in pain. It is evidence that I'm injured and there is something that I need to heal. And I say this over and over again, and I will say it until everybody who needs to hear it hears it. It is not weak to sustain energetic and emotional injury from difficult circumstances. People can get stuck in a why phase in the victim stage of recognizing something terrible happened to me and it was absolutely not fair. Beyond that stage, which is resolved by almost everybody in the exact same manner, which is realistically, as hard as it is, even if you know people who seem to have perfect lives, there are people who have dreadful lives and there are people who have many terrible things happen to them. And it is not handed out based on the universe not liking you or something being unfair to you. It is simply the nature of being a feeling being in an uncertain world. And some of us will have chosen very difficult paths because we're trying to learn very big lessons. And when you start trying to approach it that way, you will find that as you heal, you become the version of yourself you like the most all the time. And the part of yourself that you have maybe been hiding from is something that you've learned to love and care for enough that it's still there, but it doesn't disrupt your life. It isn't the part of yourself that you're hiding from, or the part of yourself that you try to shun, or the part of yourself that you can't love because it gets in your way. And it's not the same thing as letting it run free. It's not. It's just that everything improves when treated with love and understanding, both in other people and within ourselves. And divination and tarot is one of the things that gives you a 3D tool because it works. Now, this is the part where it gets a little bit hard because it's like, well, how does it work? It's like, here's my theory. Can I prove it? No, I cannot prove it. Here's my theory. Because your higher self, which stands outside the flow of time, is involved. There is a part of you that will know when to stop shuffling because it knows what the outcome of the cards will be and it will contain the lesson that you need. And so there is a part of you that's like, okay, now, stop now. And you'll get the cards in the order because it already knows what the order's in. It knows what the outcomes are. It has seen the many different variables and the many different outcomes, that it is about being tapped into that part of yourself so that you can shorten a journey rather than having a prolonged one, which includes sometimes coming back for repeat lessons or ever escalating ones. Because it's not just about reincarnation. It is, have you ever noticed that things get worse until you heal them? And it really is about, if you had kind of a crappy relationship when you were 20 and you didn't heal all of those things, then probably the next one you had, it was even worse. Over the course of time, toxicity becomes more poisonous. Healing, which is essentially cleaning out an energetic wound and allowing it to heal, prevents that from carrying forward and all of your outcomes improve. And so how do we know, and how does a reader know they're tapped into your energy? Frequently, a reader is essentially in conjunction with your higher self. Sometimes you will not get the outcomes that you are hoping for, or you will get a false positive on something because you're not ready to hear some information. Everything comes to you in the time that it is meant to and the time that you can handle. And in the case of the person I was talking about who said initially they thought that like it was weak to still be in pain, their emotional well-being and happiness has improved so very, very much by no longer shaming themselves for being injured by an intentional injury. Somebody intentionally did some of those things to them. And they thought it was weak to not have recovered. And it's just, no, there's just something more to heal. It's not about being weak or being strong. Some of the people who can power through, put their shoulder to the wheel, nothing bothers them, they're repressing so much and that is still going to be there. And it's in their darkest moments that it will come out. The stuff we haven't healed always comes out at the least convenient times. But if you heal it, the times that bring us challenge are less challenging. We let them go more easily. We move into a new and a more healed energy more easily. Hey, Jacob, any closing thoughts on the role of divination and tarot?
Only you kind of touched on it a little bit, but even when you go into or reading with a specific question, say always leave yourself open to other avenues of information as well. Oftentimes you're going in with this mindset that you want one thing answered, but you may not be thinking about the other things that you need to know in conjunction, or even just something completely different. There's been plenty of times where I ask you a question and the content of our conversation is nothing about my question, because that's not what I need to know in the moment, right? There were other things that were more important that were going to lay the foundation for me to then tackle the question that I thought I was ready to start dealing with, right? So if anything, that's my biggest advice, is even if you go in looking for one specific piece of information, please leave yourself open to other avenues of information as well. It's all there to work together to get you to that final place of understanding.
There's one thing I wanted to add, and it's a super important one, and so I'm glad that it occurred to me just as we were closing out. Please remember that not every reader can read for every person. Yeah. If you come from very different walks of life, if you value different things, if you're trying to learn different things, and sometimes quite simply your energy does not match, you will not, like, the reader will not be able to read for you, or like as a reader. Has that ever happened to me? It has happened to me. Tell you like an indication of like one of the times that I was just like, what am I even doing here? I got hired to do a party in Tarzana. And I don't really do parties any longer, but I got hired to do a party in Tarzana. And I'm so used to dealing with trauma survivors and people who have, like, you know, had all kinds of assaults. And like, like energy attracts like energy. But I was hired by a family that was largely very, very functional and very healthy. And like the husbands loved their wives and the wives loved their husbands. And so I'm reading the cards and I was like, wow, this feels different. This feels so very, very different. And I realized that they probably needed somebody who's a lighter reader than I am. Like, it was, everything turned out fine. They were very happy with the evening, but it was one of the few times that I had a group experience where it's like, we are living in different energies. And I did my very best with it, but it was a weird experience. It was a weird experience because I looked into the people's cards and it was mostly like they probably thought I was brilliant, actually, because I warned them against crypto, like right before it crashed. I was like, you need to get out. Like, to absolutely, like, all of the guys were very invested in that. But overall, like, I didn't feel like I had a lot to offer them, because like, I help people heal, and like, that's not the lifetime you're here for. You're here for a less challenged path. And I don't know why. Maybe it's to learn how to be a family unit, to learn how to be a mom, to learn, because that happens too. Different people come here on different, it's like a different excursion or a different tour plan. Different people come here to do different things. So if you have a reader that you really don't click with, it's not necessarily that the reader isn't a good reader. It's that you don't have compatible energies, and to please remember that. And when trying to read for yourself, remember it usually takes somebody who is not protecting ego to really see the things that you need to, as in the case where Jacob drew the devil. And I was like, I would swear to you up and down, I defeated that thing and put it in the ground, burned the body, salted the earth. I mean, there's no way, it's still there. And after you drew that card, I like really went over things very intensely. And there was one last thing that I was like, okay, that is one last form of denial that I was engaging in that I didn't even think about. And so it did give me the key to that. It did give me the key to that. But was it coming out my own cards? No, it was not. So this has been Logical Magic, Examining Esoterica. And that was our first episode on divination. And I think Jacob and I were both kind of like, you know, it was nice to have an episode that wasn't about these deep psychological traumas and things. That was all about the fun history of things. My suggestion is, if you are interested in tarot, to start with something, like I said, Tarot Your Way, Barbara Moore, is a very good, it has a guidebook that has numerology, which is going to be present. There's going to be symbolism that is covered as well. The court cards, which are not always about figures, which is something that every reader needs to hear. They're not always about a man, woman, child. There can be about energies. It's that particular fairly brief guidebook is the introductory level one that is what I recommend to people. But what I really recommend to people is to use Sandra Ann Taylor's energy deck. And that one, I only read oracle cards in the upright. I don't find them to retain their meaning in reverse. That one's the one that I recommend because you can learn that fairly easily. It's very straightforward, has a good solid guidebook with it, and it has the closest correlation to tarot so that you can then move to the tarot very easily indeed. So that's my advice on that. What about you, Jacob? Do you have any advice for people who are looking to get into tarot?
I don't know how you feel about this, but when I was learning, I was self-taught as well. And what I found was helpful for me was, like, when you get your deck, say, read through the guidebook, obviously, but then put it on the shelf and don't pick it back up again, really. Like, get that information in your head, but don't use the book as a crutch. Because, again, all of those symbols are going to be, like, while they have their meanings that are accepted, there's going to be nuance and you're going to have different interpretations. So take the general meaning that you get from the book and then put the book away and never pick it back up again. And just trust in yourself to get the information that you need out of the things that you see and not rely so much on what the book says.
That's an excellent point. Remember, it's an ever evolving craft as well. You won't be the reader on day one that you would be on day, 800, as a, for instance. And yes, people can get way caught up in it's an intuitive art. It's an intuitive art. Mm-hmm. So it's important to have some base knowledge. I will tell you really honestly, I did not get a lot of base knowledge when I was reading tarot. I actually worked from the opposite direction where I worked with the cards and I had just the very basic meanings on things and developed an intuitive understanding of them first and then gained more knowledge at a later date. And there's no real wrong way to do it. But if you have to keep looking at a book to tell you what the cards mean, it means you have not tapped into your intuition yet. It's good to have some base knowledge, but ideally what you're trying to do is develop your intuition, which can then guide you outside of anything having to do with cards, which is the goal, is to open that channel, that avenue, that develop that ability so that it's present for you, whether or not you have a deck of cards nearby or a reader that you like that you can book with. It will help you develop a reliable relationship to your own inner guidance, which everybody does have, just people have it to different degrees. And why would I have it at a higher level? It was just part of my life's purpose. It was what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to use tarot to help people heal. And it's just kind of that simple. This has been Logical Magic Examining Esoterica. That's our first episode on divination covering tarot, the different types of it. If you want to find me to book me for a tarot card reading or a life coaching session, that is at therisingmoon.com. That is the only way to book me. I have a Patreon coming up in January of 2024. It starts with the Spirit Guide Daily. We're going to move into things like meditations. The one that I'm working on right now is a meditation to overcome intrusive thoughts, which is something that a lot of people with anxiety issues really need some help with. There'll be some other energy healing, some magic lessons. It's going to evolve and develop over the course of time as it is meant to. Jacob is available at Southern Style Readings on Facebook, and then through Southern Style Readings at gmail.com. And I find him to be a really helpful and intuitive reader, and I think you would as well. Thank you so much for joining me. Remember, your higher self is always on your side. It just doesn't invest in the difficulties of the moment in the same way that your ego does. And that's completely natural. And it's not an insult. It's just something to keep in mind. Take care. Be well. Live magically.